Hello, everyone. This is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Brent Baker. He is a consultant, business coach, educator, and investor with a lifetime of work in the construction and development industries, facilitating positive, measurable change in his clients' personal and business lives. He is a very busy man, so he's able to carve out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So we are very thankful, fortunate, and blessed to have him here as a guest. So thank you so much, Brent, for coming on. And I guess to start off, can you tell us about your background and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do today?
Well, sure. It's a bit of a long path, but I'm happy to describe it. And thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate it. It all started, actually, the roots of this go back to when I was in college studying psychology back in the early 70s, and I was looking for a better-paying summer job to help me get through college. I had to work my way through school, and I joined the Carpenters Union, Santa Rosa local, the Carpenters Union, as an apprentice. And I became an apprentice carpenter, did that for a while, and then I found as I continued to work my way through college and immediately after college, I always found that I could fall back on that skill set and pretty much immediately within a day or two find some work. So it's just a good background to have that available. But really, I was interested in other things, and as it turned out over time, as I kept falling back on that skill set, I ended up getting married and raising a family. As it turned out, my father-in-law was a builder and developer, and so it was just kind of, you know, natural between falling back on, you know, doing small little construction jobs and handyman jobs as fillers. He ended up needing some help. He was from Washington, D.C., and from an established firm there, and he had some health issues later in his life, and wasn't able to finish things up and wind down. So I actually, you know, went back and lived part of the year each year for a number of years back in Washington, D.C., kind of finishing up things for him. And I started learning a whole lot more from that experience, working on some, you know, really big residential and commercial projects in the union. I had worked on industrial projects and then got commercial and residential experience on mid-rise eight-story buildings, and I learned the whole business side of things. I started dealing with attorneys and accountants and project managers and property managers and designers, and it just things kept growing from there. Well, meanwhile, I'd always thought I'd get back into a people-helping business. I always, when I graduated from college with a degree in psychology, I thought, well, I'm too young. How can I advise people who've been around a really, really long time with way more experience than I have? I didn't feel comfortable advising people. So I thought to myself, I'll go out and get some real-world experience, and then I can come back and help people, but I'll have more under my belt. It'll be more meaningful if I do that. So I went off, and little did I know that life would just suck me up at that point, and it did. And so then eventually, after helping my father-in-law in D.C., after he passed away, my wife and I founded a company out west back in Idaho, a construction and development company, and we started building spec homes and custom homes and remodels, and then I got a public works license, and from there we grew until we had, we were licensed in three states, had 26 employees, and you know, it started taking off and kind of worked our way up toward to the top of our market, and we had a satellite office in Redwood City, California, the home office in Sandpoint, Idaho. Mm-hmm. We're working in Montana as well. And then I decided I really wanted to go on and do some different things. I was really loving development work, and so I went off and started getting involved in ski resort development work in British Columbia and sold my construction company to key employees. Kept a piece of it, but so they basically ran it, and I'd be available about 5 hours a week to help them out. But really, I moved on to work in BC on very, very large ski resort development projects. Then After a while, I was doing some consulting work. After that, after the crash of 2008 was a life changing and not in the good way experience for me. And I came back and decided, well, maybe I'll do a little consulting work. And while I was doing that, I worked for a company that was doing coaching, consulting, and education in another industry, but they're expanding and creating a new division. They're creating a new business that was specifically engineered for custom home builders and remodelers. So they brought me in as an industry expert to help them develop their program. And then while working as a consultant for them on that, they hit a point where they had a parting of the ways with their director of coaching at the time. And they asked me, they said, well, we really like the work you've been doing for us as a consultant. Would you consider coming to work for us full-time as an employee and help us develop this? We'll make you our director of coaching. So I thought about it, and I told them at that point we had already had for a dozen years already a house in the south of France. And I told them, well, my wife is retired, and she expects me to be going to France twice a year for a month with her.
Wow.
So I can work for you, but only if it can work around that. And I thought that would be the end of that, and they'd say goodbye. But they said no. They said, we'll make that work. So I did that for 4 years and then had a parting of the ways a little over a year ago from them and realized really I saw things a little differently than they did. I felt I could deliver, more value more effectively in a different way to clientele. And based on feedback from clients that I had worked with successfully before, they said, 90-something percent of what you do is actually not industry specific. The things that really help us, why don't you reach out and help more people, in other industries too. And I had been thinking that myself. And so I decided in my new company that I started working on about a little over a year ago, that I would do that. I made the shift and designed my programs to actually reach out much, much more broadly, if you will. So now I'm in my sixth year of full-time consulting, coaching, and educating, but just beginning my second year of trying to expand that out beyond the space of custom home builders and remodelers.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. That is an incredible story. Thank you for sharing it. And you mentioned before it was sort of like a long path, and I could see that. And you studied psychology in college, and so you finally got to put that psychology degree to use in the sense that you can use that knowledge to help coach people, right? And combine it with what you're doing within the construction real estate space. So that's amazing. And it's interesting, you got into carpentry, and then, which was sort of like your plan B, which was great to have. And then with your father-in-law, I guess he sort of introduced you to that real estate construction development space. And then you went to D.C. and learned more about it with lawyers and whatnot. And then I see how you got into the coaching, and it's interesting that they were able to work with you when it came to with your wife in France, and you did that for 4 years. It shows how valuable, how much value you provided to the firm that they were able to do that for you, which isn't usual or it's not common. So that's amazing. And so now you're a full-time coach. Is going to your sixth year, or this is your sixth year?
Yes, I'm in my. I've done it. I've got 5 years full time doing this, and only this really. So this is. I entered. In March. I entered my sixth year of doing this now, and I people ask me how long. I've had some people ask, why don't you just retire? Because I'm 70 years old now, and the reality is, I love my work. I love what I do, and I really. I don't want to just go play golf all day or something. So I'm going to be around a while. My father is, he worked half-time up until he was 86. So I figure, you know, I got a few years left in me, and I want to share what I can while I can.
Wow, that's amazing. I've heard the saying that people should never retire, and that's how, if you never retire, you live real long and whatnot. And I think there is some truth to that. I actually spoke with one guest, and he said he wanted to continue doing what he was doing until the wheels fell off and whatnot. So I think I'd love to be in that kind of situation. You know, obviously you love what you're doing. They say when you love what you do, you never have to work a day in your life. And I think you've found a true calling and whatnot. You know, Mark Twain says you have two birthdays. You know, the day you were born and the day you figure out why, and you know both your birthdays, which is great, of course. And it's interesting. Now, just recently you started expanding and working and coaching in other industries. It's amazing because you figured out what you were doing, applied to other industries, and I could see that. I'm curious, obviously, you know, we all got hit with you-know-what, the pandemic. And I'm wondering, how would you describe the current state of affairs when it comes to business, and what challenges, if any, has the pandemic posed?
Well, that's it's interesting because that's not an easy question to answer because it's so situational. Some businesses were absolutely crushed, and others have more work than they've ever had and are actually booming, and things couldn't have been better for them. They just happen to have the right, you know, model and the right service at the right time and place. But really what it comes down to is people have become acutely aware of, you know, you've heard the acronym VUCA, and it is things are volatile, uncertain, you know, complex. And we need to and ambiguous, and we need to be aware of that. And in fact, the world's been that way for quite a while, but we just become acutely aware of how important understanding that is. And what's important is learning as a business how to be agile, not rigid, how to be strategic, how to be agile, how to be flexible, and how to pivot. Because if you didn't find yourself just fortunately, you know, if you were a maker of personal protective equipment and then this happened to you, you're lucky. But if you're a restaurant owner or a movie theater owner, you're in big trouble. And so the key is how do people figure, what can we do that will provide value? And making that pivot and being flexible and ready to move on a dime and having a great culture so the team really pulls together. That makes all the difference in the world, you know, in the situation.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And I totally agree with you. Obviously, some businesses thrived and some found it harder to survive. And it's interesting, but a lot of people who own businesses in those industries that were supposedly hard hit were actually able to do well, apparently, because they were able to do that, I think, pivot and be agile and sort of change how their business functioned, so to speak. And you talked a lot about VUCA. This is the first time I'm hearing of it, but I'm definitely going to use it from steal it from you. This volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And obviously, this is nothing new. We've been dealing with that for a while, but people are more, you said, acutely aware of it. I totally see that. And this idea of being agile and pivotable, you know, they say life is 10% what happens to you, 90% how you respond. And I think that's so true. You know, a lot of businesses were able to adapt, you know, and whatnot. And, you know, when life gives you a lemon, you make lemonade, and they were able to make that lemonade. So I think there is something to that, to being agile and whatnot. So I'm curious, obviously, there'll be a time when the pandemic goes away for the most part, hopefully sooner rather than later, particularly with the ramped up distribution of vaccines and whatnot. Where do you see things in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
You know, I don't like to prognosticate. I don't pretend to be able to read the future, but all I know is, yeah, I know what I'm going to be doing, which is be in the trenches helping as best I can while I still can. Okay. We'll see what happens. I think things are going to come. I think we're going to be stronger for, you know, there's this idea of, you know, as part of resilience, there's this concept out there called anti-fragility. And that takes it to another level, and we come back stronger. It's not only do we rebound and have resilience, but actually come back stronger than we went in. And that's part of the anti-fragility concept. And I do believe in response to the pandemic and the political chaos that's been occurring, not just here at home, but globally, I think we're going to emerge stronger. I'm ever an optimist.
Right.
Maybe foolishly so, but I'm not uncomfortable being an optimist. So I like it. I'd rather be taken advantage of once in a while than be curmudgeonly about things. I think we're going to come back stronger than ever, quite honestly.
Wow. That's an amazing mentality to have, to be an optimist and understand that, yeah, people are going to, you know, exploit you and whatnot, but it's rare and it happens, doesn't happen that often. More often than not, it works out to your advantage when you're an optimist and look on the bright side. I actually like that mentality a lot. So, yeah, thank you for sharing it. You know, every time I interview people, I learn lots of great things when I interview successful people. And so thank you so much for that nugget there. So you're not sure what will happen exactly in the future, although you're an optimist, but what you do know is that you'll be an optimist. You'll be in the trenches, and you'll be working in the trenches no matter what's going on, making, adapting, pivoting, and whatnot. In the world where VUCA dominates. And, you know, it's interesting. They say that the only change you can expect is change. And so, yeah, you know, learning how to be agile, I think, is so important. I'm curious, what would you say to someone who views a coach as being sort of unnecessary, the idea of paying someone to advise you, taking on that kind of expense? Do you know someone who may roll their eyes at that kind of thing and be skeptical? What would you say to that individual?
You know, surprisingly, what I would say to them is they're right. It's not necessary. You know, you don't need a coach. It's not necessary. It's useful. So if you want to compete, if you want to excel, if you want to grow,
right,
if you want to get the most out of life, you're going to do that. You're going to seek out some coaching, possibly some consulting. You're going to be engaged in a process of lifelong learning, and you're going to be that kind of person. Leadership involves developing yourself as well as the organization, the teams you're involved with, and those that compete well are just going to do better. It's that simple. So one thing I like to say is that if you're totally comfortable with or committed to mediocrity, paying for mistakes that weren't necessary, then be my guest. I mean, I certainly, big part of what I learned was doing things the hard way over a long period of time and realizing a lot of the things that I suffered through just weren't necessary. They could have been avoided, and much greater progress could have been made much sooner by doing things a little differently. You know, it's the fact is, if you look, and you hear this said all the time in our industry, but the fact is that if you look at the PGA, you know, every golfer out there active in the PGA now competing has a coach. If you look at the tennis circuit, every world dominating tennis player that's competing out there, every one of them without exception has a coach. Every opera singer and every star on Broadway as a dance coach and a voice coach. And it's like everybody who excels has a coach. The top surgeons get coaches. People who do extreme sports, say, they have coaches to help them either with their fitness or with their, you know, mental fitness. and ability. And the reality is most executives and senior managers in the most successful companies all engage in coaching. Mm. So like I say, a lot of people become entrepreneurs because they want to be their own boss and they just want to do their own thing, right? Mm. And so you see a lot of, self-willed behavior, if you will, in the entrepreneurial world because people just want that independence. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you really want, there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you want. But there comes a time when you realize, for the efforts I'm putting in, it seems like I could get more out of this situation. I've hit a ceiling, and I just seem to be putting out too many fires and not seem to be moving through the way I had hoped or envisioned I would. That's the perfect time to get some consulting, some coaching, making sure you have a learning and development program going on because it takes that. In this very competitive world, it takes that. And I think we're here to develop ourselves. People, we just fundamentally benefit from realizing we are all here to develop ourselves as best we can. And we don't know what that thing is we can achieve. And until we try and push our limits, we don't even know.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. And, I think that was an incredible answer. And, my opinion is that everyone needs a coach. And if the best have a coach and you want to be one of the best, well, then, there you go. And it's interesting. You talked about how it's easy to learn from the mistakes of others instead of making those same mistakes. It saves you more time. It speeds you up on the learning curve, so to speak. And definitely there is something to that. And being coached and mentored by someone who's at the level that one wants to attain, I think is great. Tony Robbins talks about how success leaves clues and there's a breadcrumb trail and you just have to follow it. And it's interesting. Now, the reason why I think people need to have a coach is obviously the accountability factor. No one holds you accountable better than a human being. A book can't, a magazine article can't, a blog can't, a social media post can't hold you accountable as much as a human being who knows what he's talking about can. And it's interesting that a coach can also give you that outsider perspective, that objective outside perspective that a person who's inside an organization may not be able to see quite as well, particularly if they're surrounded by yes men and yes women. Coaches more like to be honest and upfront with the client, so to speak. And so I definitely think there is something to it when it comes to coaching. And my understanding is that the profession of business coaching is actually expanding by leaps and bounds, that the number may double by the end of the year because so many people are starting businesses. So I guess you're rightly positioned for that wave, so to speak. I think that's incredible. Now, I'm curious, obviously, since there's so many coaches out there, there's going to be more coaches coming in the future, of course, and since there's a low barrier to entry to become a business coach, you don't necessarily have to have a degree or pass a test or get a license or necessarily have a certification. So there's quite a lot of coaches out there. What is your competitive advantage? Like, what do you do differently from other coaches? What makes you maybe better than some of the others and whatnot?
Well, I think the important statement there is there are a lot of coaches out there, and what I've discovered is there are a lot of really good ones. I would never say like, there's a whole bunch of coaches, but most of them are really bad, and I'm one of the very few good ones. That would be an untrue statement. There's actually a lot of really great ones. And I think that the main thing that I bring to the table really is the depth of experience and the integration of my original formal training in psychology, pulling it through. Now, I just realized, it's funny, I was thinking this morning now in the construction and development industry, it's this spring will be the 50th anniversary since I joined the Carpenters Union.
Wow.
That was 71, so 21 is going to be, is that right? Yeah, 30 and 20. Yeah, it's going to be my 50th anniversary of that.
Wow.
I have 40 years of entrepreneurship under my belt. And this is now my sixth year of coaching and consulting. So it's just there's a depth of experience and training there. And the whole time in those 40 years of entrepreneurship, I was utterly committed to having learning and development programs in place throughout. So I've been studying an awful long time, but also out in the trenches, duking it out in the real world. So when I bring it all back into this program, I'm bringing, I have to say, a lot more to the table than most of the people I've met, which doesn't mean I'm better. I want to make that very clear. And so, and the other thing is that's interesting is the amount of need there, even though there are tons of coaches out there, the reality is the need is much greater. I did some research on it and found out that, okay, there are approximately 32 million tax filing companies in the world globally. Wow. There's 32 million of them, and that something like 0.01% of those are the globally dominating publicly traded corporations. You know, basically the Forbes 5,000.
That's right.
Divide 5,000 by 32 million. So then there's another tier of companies that are doing really well and have great learning and development, mid-sized companies up to enterprise, global enterprises that didn't quite make the Forbes 5,000. They have a lot going on for them in the way of training, but you're still left with basically globally 16 to 20 million companies that have basically no learning and development program in place whatsoever, and they urgently actually need that. So of that 16 to 20 million, I can help. I won't, just because I don't want to be overworked. So at ENC right now, we can only take on in any given year, we only work with 6 to 12 companies, other than our education outreach, which we try to make super low cost and available to everybody. That's our outreach. But for working, you know, intimately with, it's very limited how many we can work with directly personally. So I don't need to sell to everybody. I don't need to try and convince everybody they need to come use my services. One of the things I feel really good about is the depth of my Rolodex and the amount of networking I've been doing because of the pandemic and the rise of Zoom. I've been really focusing on my networking, and I'm meeting all kinds of amazing dynamic consultants and coaches all over the world. And I'm blown away by how awesome some of these people are. So I just keep notes and say, great, I'm keeping my eyes open. So I know out of those 16 or 20 million companies that desperately need help, I'm going to know people who can help others in ways that I couldn't. They have greater expertise in certain ways, on certain topics, in certain industries. And I'm happy to, and I don't, of course, charge anybody to do any of this. I'm happy to facilitate and connect people together. And I derive, you know, great satisfaction from doing that.
Wow. From being like a matchmaker and referring
out. That's right.
I love doing that myself. I totally get that. And I think I've sent you a couple of connection emails myself to business coaches and whatnot. And so definitely love doing that. And I certainly wouldn't charge for it, of course. And I'm curious now, obviously, you know, you talked a lot about what sets you apart is that obviously you have decades of experience being out in the trenches, duking it out when it comes to business and entrepreneurialism. And you spent most of that time, if not all that time, doing learning and development, which is, you know, studying some more, which is incredible. And you talked a lot about how you help businesses, perhaps if they reach a ceiling, and you help them blow past that plateau or that ceiling, which is amazing. And so, you know, I could see why, you know, why someone might choose you over perhaps another business coach. But you did mention that there are so many good business coaches out there that you've met through networking and had, I'm sure, Zoom meetings with. And so that's incredible. Now, my understanding is you coach businesses not only in the U.S., but around the world or just in several different countries.
Yeah, basically my marketplace is to anybody who can understand what I'm saying. So it's the English-speaking world right now. I do speak, I speak French fairly fluently, but business, the subtleties of business language are complex, and it makes it difficult to confirm that I'm really getting the message across and doing it right. Mm. So if I partner in other countries where I speak some German and I speak, I used to speak Italian, but I'm not going to be able to communicate there, but in the way I'd like to. So really right now, my marketplace is the English speaking world. Anybody can understand what I have to share. It's pretty universal and I'm ready to help. So far I've done experimentally reaching out globally. I've done a little bit of work in Israel and in Mexico and in Canada so far, but I'm really looking forward to expanding that and being able to, much more globally share what it is I have to share.
Wonderful. And you'll be happy to know that the listeners of this podcast tend to be listeners that are around the world in foreign countries, about 20%. Which must be great news for you since you work in the English speaking world. Now, my understanding is that English is sort of like a universal language. A lot of people speak it around the world, like a lingua franca, so to speak. And so that gives you a lot, that gives you a huge market, so to speak, just with English alone. And so, which is amazing, I think, which is a great opportunity for you. So I'm curious, obviously over the years, you've helped a lot of folks, a lot of entrepreneurs, and are continuing to do so as of right now. Can you tell us any of the most moving or entertaining stories from your life and career?
Yeah, I have so many. It's hard to narrow them down, but I could tell a few little stories here for the time we have available, and the ones I feel comfortable telling without knowing you better. But there's one story I think about periodically. It's one kind of interesting story. Back when I was in college, and I'm going to share. I'll share two or three little stories with you. One was back when I was in college and had been working through the union hall as an apprentice carpenter back in the early 70s, back in 71, 72 maybe it was. Mm-hmm. Work had kind of dried up. That's when we had the gas crisis and the recession in the early 70s.
Right.
And work got really slow out of the union hall, and I needed to make some money. It was essential. And so I took a job, a part-time job. I think I worked 3 days a week working around my college schedule at a company in Petaluma, California, called at the time. I don't know if it's still there. I'd love to look it up and see if they still exist. Called the Petaluma Sign Company. And they made metal signs for that are on trucks where you have to, if you're carrying corrosives or explosives or whatever, you have to have these different signs on your trucks. And they made those and other traffic signs and so on. They were painted metal signs. And so I was working, and what I did was, it was really, the work didn't pay that well, but it was okay. And it was production work at the time. That's all robotic nowadays, I'm sure. But basically, I stood at a riveting machine on my shift. And basically what I did is I placed rivets all day long. I was a riveter. And I just kept my head down and did my job, and the only thing I cared about was not riveting my hand to a piece of metal. Then one day, one of the owners of the factory, there were three guys that owned it, and I'd never said a word to any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the owners came over and asked me to turn off my machine and just pulled me aside to have a talk with me. I had no idea what was going on. And he said he wanted to tell me a story. He wanted to talk to me.
Okay.
And to this day, I have no idea, because I never talked to anybody there, pretty much, other than hello and goodbye. And somehow, I don't know what he saw or why, to this very day, but he took me aside and sat me down and said he wanted to tell me something. Yes, I thought he was going to say, I have to fire you. You don't rivet fast enough. You're too afraid of your hand or something. So instead he said, I want to tell you something. He said, you know, when we start, this business is doing really well right now, but I want to tell you the path to this business success was littered first with failures. Let me tell you, I had two other companies before this one, and they both completely failed. And he told me about how that went and how he just tried again after the first one failed. And then he started another company, and that one failed. And then he tried again. And on the third one, it took, bingo, it worked, and everything was happening the way he wanted. He wanted me to know and remember that that's the way it really works. And don't be discouraged, and don't be afraid to try, because keep coming back at it, and eventually you get here. And I want you to know that. Now, why he would pick me out on this factory floor of all these different people working, to this day, I have no idea why he pulled me aside to tell me that. And then he let me go back to riveting. But I've never, ever forgotten that. That was just amazing to me. And then here's another story for you. When I had my construction company, and I had, you know, I had a client. It was when we were working in three states. We were kind of spread out. And we had a big, complicated remodel to do for some clients who were, you know, successful, up-and-coming professionals. And the Bay Area real estate market was starting to take off, but nothing like what it is today. This was back in the – this would have been back in the late 90s, I would say. And so we were doing the job, and I learned a really valuable lesson in that we – is that you want to be with all the decision makers and get as many things into your contracts as you can. Get everything you understood and what was said down and in there, because we did this contract with a on a time and materials basis, but with an estimate of what the thing should cost. And the whole time we dealt with the husband while we were figuring everything out. It says, oh, no, we're going to keep it simple. We just want to capture the space and get this done, and we're not going to put a lot of demands on this. So we made our estimates based on input that we got from the husband. Well, then once the project started, he said, well, I'm really busy at work, and really, and he said, my wife will be the one you'll be dealing with and actually getting this done. Well, it turns out we had no idea that the wife had a completely different vision from the husband about what was going, what they wanted out of this project. But meanwhile, we had already laid down and written down what our good faith estimate of the costs were going to be.
Wow.
Well, needless to say, the costs escalated, and they were unexpected, as is the case with remodeling all the time. There's unexpected things, and they can really add up, things you run into you didn't know about because you couldn't see them. So we got the thing done, but we blew way past the original budget by the time the thing was done. And it came time for the final reckoning and the big final payment. Of course, they weren't, you know, happy because the budget had been so exceeded beyond what it originally was. So I told them, I just being a creative person, I told them that, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll settle. We'll, for of the overage, between the overage of what we estimated and what it actually ended up with, pay us, split the difference, pay us half of that. But I said, I think you got the value. I think you got the value out of this, and I don't think it's really fair that we take that haircut, but I want it, you're important to us, and we want to make you happy, so we'll do this. But all I ask is one thing, is when you sell the house, and if you make a tidy profit and you actually recoup it, and it turns out to be an investment, not an expense, that pay dividends, I'd like you to send us the rest of the money.
Wow.
On the overage. And I thought, of course, I thought it was just out of principle. I wanted them to make that commitment to say it. I just wanted to hear the words. Right. And then I'll be darned, like 2.5 years later, I completely forgotten about it and just written it off. It was written off. That we would never see that. And I'll be darned if we didn't get a check 2.5 years later, no letter accompanying it, nothing. Just they had sold their house. They realized we had delivered the value.
Yeah.
and they mailed us the check. And that
was
something, that was an eye-opener, because you just don't see that much out there in the construction world. It's like the time, another story would be when I had a job where actually there were some allowances, and after we did the allowance calculations, we told the clients we did the calculations. It turns out we discovered after it was all, they had occupied the house, it was all done and closed out, occupancy permit, all that. And I said, you overpaid. We actually still owe you. We're going to be sending you a check. It wasn't a huge check. It was around $8,000. I said, we're going to, be sending you a check for, because after your allowance accounting. And it was the first time as a business I got a gratuity. And she actually said, no, that's okay. You just keep it. We're really happy with what we got. Don't send me the check. You just keep it. And that's when I really realized, and then tied to that, we get pulled into competing on price so much that we fail to see that really, if you can deliver a great product, and if you can deliver great service, and if you can make your customers really happy, it really is true. You don't have to compete on price. It's not about the money. There's something else there, and that led to a whole other realm of understanding about how you do business, how you price, how you define your product, and how you deliver it. Those are all super important things.
Wow. Thank you so much for those stories. They're incredible stories. You talked about how you're working as a riveter and how the gentleman, took you aside and gave you the story about failure and how he failed. And, it's interesting. I interviewed a guest who said that there's no such thing as failure, just learning experiences. And I think that's so true. And, in my opinion, you only fail if you get knocked down, you don't get back up. Then that would be considered a true failing or whatnot. And so you learn a lot from failure and mistakes. Now, you had said before that it's best to learn from mentors and others who've made mistakes, so you learn from their mistakes. So obviously people will make mistakes on their own, but if they can learn from other people's mistakes, all the better, saves you time, whatnot. It's interesting. In my opinion, the comeback is always stronger and better than the setback, and people need to realize that. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned in the second story how the folks mailed you the check with no letter, just the check only. And that's an incredible story because, that kind of honesty and integrity, is oftentimes not so common, particularly in the world of, real estate and contractors and home modeling and stuff like that. And, we always hear these stories of, contractors running off with people's money or there's a lot of shadiness that goes on, and unfortunately, that industry. So to hear stories of that kind of honesty and integrity is amazing. And you talked about how, the folks let you keep it as a gratuity, the extra money. You were willing to give it to them, and they told you that you can keep it because they love the value of what you provided. And so there is something to that value versus pricing. People will pay more for higher value. So, the old saying, you get what you pay for. So, people don't necessarily have to compete on price. So thank you so much for those stories. I love stories. Ever since I was young, reading the book of Aesop's Fables, with every story, there's something to learn, like a moral. So thank you so much for that. And I'm curious, now you mentioned before how you've been doing a lot of networking. We actually met on LinkedIn, which is a networking platform. And so there's something to that. And you talked about how you meet people via Zoom, and we met via Zoom, which is a great platform and whatnot. And you've made lots of connections with folks, apparently around the world, business coaches, and that you can refer out to people. And I think I've sent you introduction emails to business coaches I know. I don't know if it's been of any value to you at all. I'll keep making them and whatnot. And because I like the idea of being a matchmaker as well. I'm curious, what networking advice would you give to folks? And this isn't just for entrepreneurs. This is also for, you know, job hunters, people who are unemployed looking for work, or people who have jobs and want to, you know, find a better job but realizing no job is secure, so they still want to find out what's going on in the job market. What tips on networking would you give people?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I not being a professional networker, but I'm naturally a networker, and that I love the human connection. And I would say, don't just collect connections and hope to be seen, but reach out. I've been having great results from actually reaching out and getting to know people. Set up that Zoom, get on the calendar, have a session, meet them face to face, thanks to Zoom or any other platform that lets you do that. And actually talk and get to know each other in a real way and in a non-salesy way. There's a lot of people out there just, you know, there's like a whole industry of people out, you know, I get coaches leads kind of thing. And they're just out there selling, and there's bots and there's automated, you know, funnels and this and that and going on.
Yeah.
Just like, stay away from that. Step aside and make real human connections, and just ask yourself, remember, there's plenty that needs to be done in this world. And if we're, you know, honest and hardworking and open-minded, we're going to find a good thing to settle in to do some good and have a good life. So really just reach out, meet people, be honest about where you're at, what you need, what you're looking for, and always be vigilant. How can I help someone? It's like learn, ask about the other. Ask about them. Who are they? What are they doing? How can you help them? It's like I reached out to, I don't know if you know who Marshall Goldsmith is, but, you know, he's the top executive. He kind of helped create the industry of executive coaching, if you will. And he started a philanthropy project for his knowledge. So he wants to give the world his knowledge. And I was so impressed with what he's doing with his knowledge philanthropy project. I met him in a workshop I was doing as part of my learning and development. And so I reached out and communicated directly with Marshall and said, I want to help you. Let me know anything I can do to help you. I think that's awesome what you're doing. I want to help.
Wow.
I'm on his list of people there to help him in any way they can. Me and about 2,000 others, I'm sure. But, you know, it's ask, how can I help? Who are you? What can I do for you? And then when you make that your primary position, then people are naturally going to want to, you know, humans are naturally grateful. And the gratitude will just kind of grow this community where people are looking out for each other and helping each other and learning about each other's strengths. I'm just loving the people I'm meeting. There's so many. Part of my optimism I was talking about earlier comes from a lot of the young people that I'm meeting. Some of the young people I'm meeting out there in the world give me so much hope. They are so bright.
Yeah.
So talented. And their perspective and outlook is just so right on to the way I see the world ethically, morally, spiritually. That even though things are going crazy right now, I retain my optimism in large part because of the amazing young people I keep meeting out there. So I'm loving the networking, and I'm not going to stop until I just can't do it anymore.
Wow. So you're going to do it to the wheels fall off, so to speak.
That's right.
Well, that's amazing. I love that. I definitely want to have that attitude, never retiring, just keep going and going until I can't go anymore. And I think that's amazing advice. You know, you talked about that, I guess you call it that law of reciprocity. You know, if you help others, they feel almost compelled to help you. It's almost part of human nature. It's in Cialdini's book, Influence, which I recommend to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
And Go Giver by Bob Berg, another one. And you have that spirit of a go giver. Of how offering help, and you reached out to Marshall Goldsmith and said, how can I help you and whatnot. And it's interesting. You talked a lot about how you're a natural networker. I can see that. And you've gotten great results, which doesn't surprise me. And, you know, people love these human connections, and you're not a big fan of that whole sell on the the first handshake approach kind of thing. And, you know, it's interesting how a lot of people have it backwards. I was reading a book by Chet Holmes called The Ultimate Sales Machine, and he says that most people don't buy what you're selling when you first approach them. Very few, probably 1% or 2% at best. And the majority of people will buy from you, vast majority, will buy from you not now, but a year or two or three later, right? And it's best to build the relationship with those folks, stay in touch with those folks, and stay top of mind. And then when they need what you sell, they can reach out to you, you know, not now, but a year from now or whatnot. And I think so many people have it backwards, and it's unfortunate, you know. So, again, you know, thank you so much for that networking advice. I think you're a great networker. And part of the reason why I started the podcast, the primary reason, was so I could start relationships by offering value to folks. And it's all about networking. The secondary reason was to showcase my voice, which a lot of people compliment me on. So I figured, why not? And it's interesting. I got the idea to do the podcast from books I read by Steve Gordon, who used to network the old way but found interviewing people is the best way to do it. But it goes back to what you were talking about before, about offering value to folks and helping people, and then they in turn feel very grateful and whatnot. I'm curious, and thank you for the networking advice, what advice would you give to folks who hear what you're saying and they love to do what Brent's doing, you know, who want to do what you're doing? What would you tell them?
Well, what I would tell them is, and this touches back to a topic we discussed a little bit earlier, and that's about making the mistakes and doing things the slow, hard way. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes a long time, and you pay a big price to learn those lessons. And I would recommend to anyone that's interested really in anything, not just, you know, doing coaching and consulting and educating, but in anything, is go out and find somebody or an organization that is really good, mm-hmm. you know, an industry leader in that thing, and mm-hmm. get a job working with them and learn from the inside and put in a significant chunk of time mm-hmm. working with them, you know, and pay and stick around long enough to pay them back for all they teach you as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to steal their intellectual property and run, but stick around and deliver value to that organization. And be mentored, be coached, learn, be trained in that organization. And the whole time be looking at, you know, how could I do this differently? How could I do this better? So that when you launch, when you make that decision, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, I'm going to go do this my way, you've already seen, you already have good knowledge about what are industry best practices. What do these people I've been working with all these years, what are they doing right? And I want to make sure I continue, but with my own spin. And what are they doing wrong that I'm going to change? Because I don't think that's right. I think it would be better if, and then you put your own stamp on it, but you get that initial foundation right. You understand so much more about your own business going in. So I would say, don't rush. Take your time. Learn all you can from those that have a lot to share with you. Pay them back by doing some good work with them for a while. Then go off and start your company. It's a better path.
Wow, that's amazing advice, and thank you so much for that. And, you know, as we said before, you know, obviously, like Tony Robbins says, you know, success leaves clues, you know, joining an organization, learning from those people, getting to pick their brains and whatnot, and, you know, learning how they do it, but not stealing the intellectual property, so important not to do that, and then stick with them for a while, then start your own thing. I like that advice a lot. Thank you so much for that. And can you, can you give us advice for entrepreneurs who, you know, who are listening to this and think, you know, maybe I need a coach, and they could reach out to you, which I think would be a great decision. Of course, let's say you're busy. You said before, you know, you can't handle all, you know, there's millions of businesses out there, and obviously you're just one person. And let's say you're on vacation, or you just have your hands full. What advice would you give to folks on when it comes to looking for a coach?
That's a good, very good question. I would say don't rush. take your time and talk to several people first. But I would say also learn a little bit about the difference between coaching, mentoring, consulting, and educating, because we need all those things, and they're all a little bit different. And at any given time, any particular organization or individual might need more of one or the other, or just one of those things, or some combination of those things. And it helps to understand first what those differences are, and then make sure you're hooking up with somebody with a great track record, like with provable, identifiable results. Like we always, in the work I did previously, in the previous 5 years, we always had KPIs, key productivity or process indicators, that that we identified. We had plans in place, and we tracked the numbers. We had dashboards so that we would have measurable results from our efforts. So we could say, here's where our value comes from. And we always, I will say this, a company that I consulted for and then worked for 4 years, they were good about having a policy that if we can't identify you're actually profiting from, you don't become an expense to anybody. We just make you more profit, period. So it was very business and profit focused. But we stopped charging and would work for free in the rare event. It seldom happened, but it did, where we'd say, we're just going to work for free for a while because the cash isn't flowing as the result of the efforts. So we're not, don't pay for a while. We're just going to work with you for a while. You got to do this, this, and this. Let's get it back on track. So our value proposition comes from a piece of the results we actually get. There is no charging. For no results. That's just not a thing. That's the ethical standard, and that's the way it was at the company I worked at before. And, of course, I carry that forward now. I have no interest in charging, you know, anybody for something they're not getting. So, you know, you want to make sure you're with somebody that's getting you actual, identifiable, measurable, confirmed results, and somebody you like, somebody you connect with, whose, you know, worldview aligns with you, with yours, and who you enjoy spending the time, because if you're going to do some coaching or some consulting work, you're going to be spending time with them, and you want you want to look forward to that time, not feeling like, oh, I got to do this again. You know, so make sure it's somebody you like, somebody you respect, somebody who gets results, somebody who motivates, challenges, and excites you for your future. And follow up on the references. Talk to some references, and talk to a few people. You know, get a feel for, does this seem like the right one? And here's the thing, is it's not like you're only going to get to make this decision once, and if you make the wrong decision, you're screwed. It's not like that at all. People and companies work with different consultants and different coaches all the time. It's an ongoing thing, you know, and in bigger corporations, they have ongoing learning and development programs, and there's always consulting, multiple consultants every year with changeover in who they are and what they're focusing on, different learning and development programs, education programs, coaching. It's ongoing. Try somebody for a while, you know? You wouldn't lock into a real long contract till you know they're the right ones for you. If you're going to go to a 1 to 3 year contract, make sure there's somebody who you're really excited about. But you know what? To try somebody for 3 months, give it a whirl. Give it a go and learn what you can and get what you can and say, okay, if you weren't 100% satisfied and you want more, take a breather, spend a few months applying what you learned or a year, and then find somebody else and give a whirl with them and see what you can do with them. I mean, it's all beneficial.
Wow. Thank you so much for that advice. That was great. The idea of giving, you know, a coach a good trial run, see where it goes, right? And and whatnot. I think a lot of coaches offer a free consultation for maybe the first hour and whatnot. I guess that's something they could take advantage of. I guess it comes down to take your time, shop around. You know, it's like holding an audition or you're interviewing. And obviously, it's someone you have to know, like, and trust. You have to get along with this person because you're going to share intimate details about your life and business with this individual. And so that's so important that you like them. and that they motivate and challenge you and you mesh well with them. And they have to have that track record. They have to have gotten results for folks in the past. You mentioned, looking at references, and my understanding is you also refer out people may come to you that you may not be a good fit for, which is great and whatnot. And so, looking at the track record, so part, you mentioned how you had learned in that firm you're with the idea that you didn't really charge them. You worked for free in the beginning, but didn't really charge them until they got results. I love that. I think that's amazing. And, as a coach, to put your money where your mouth is, so to speak. And, if you don't get a result for them, why charge them and whatnot? So I actually like that a lot. I don't know. I'm guessing that's sort of uncommon, or is that common? Or?
Oh, it's not entirely uncommon. And we would, to correct you a little bit there, we did charge up front for the first 3 or 4 months, but if you didn't start seeing after 3 or 4 months, it should have caught up and you would have benefited, financially, measurably, more than you spent on us by then. If you weren't getting that traction, then we'd back off and make sure you did. But there are some coaching companies who don't charge at all. They take a percentage. They take 20% of your increased revenues, for example. There's one model. One good business coach has got a program that he's developed, and he doesn't charge anything, but for a period of, I forget what it is, they do 2 years of coaching, and from the time they start coaching, whatever your increase in revenues are, they take 20% of that as their fees. I don't do that because I don't think revenue is a measure of anything necessarily important. You could be, if you're losing 1% per annum net profit, what good does it do to increase your revenues and be paying for, you're going backwards. So that's not a KPI I would use. But, and likewise, Marshall Goldsmith predicated a program he developed for the world's top executives where if they would define the results, they'd pick out what are the KPIs, who are all the people involved, we're going to work for, 6 to 18 months. I think 18 months was his average engagement. And if we make these changes as measured by your stakeholders, on average 16, sometimes 10, but on average 16 stakeholders, these are things I learned from Marshall, then you say, if we hit these thresholds, what is that worth to you? And they set it up in advance, and you didn't get paid till the end of the engagement. When they did the before and after measurements on their KPIs, then he, and I'm sure he's paid really well, judging by the clientele he's worked for, the top top executives, the CEOs, the top organizations in the world. And he gets paid only based on achieving the results that they agreed upon at the beginning, at the end. So it's 100% results-based program.
Wow.
And just like the other one I mentioned, but it doesn't have to be based on revenue. It could be whatever you all agree on in the beginning should be the measurements. But you want to have identifiable results. To have accountability, you have to have accountability against what? And it doesn't have to be money. It can be how your direct reports perceive you. It can be how your subcontractors respond to you. It can be any of a number of things that you decide are important and valuable to you. Focus on that.
Wow. Thank you so much for that clarification. I think that's amazing. So apparently it's not uncommon. So that's good to know. And so many coaches do it in a lot of different ways, like one based on the revenue, which is not one you particularly subscribe to or recommend for the reasons you discussed, which I totally understand. And Marshall, clearly is a very knowledgeable guy. Perhaps I can connect with him on LinkedIn. And so definitely thank you so much for that. And here's the thing. I guess I have to kind of throw in a little bit of a bonus question. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, and I guess I should have given this to you earlier to look over. Obviously there's a high failure rate with businesses. And most businesses fail within, my understanding, the first couple of years. Why do you think this is, and how do we turn those statistics around? With coaching alone, you think all these business coaches can do it, or what's going on?
No. No, that is a great question. No, coaching alone won't do that. So if you're talking about businesses failing, most of them that fail, I think 40%, if I remember right, something like historically, traditionally, about 40% of businesses that start up will fail within the first 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and 60% will fail within, I think it's 5 years total,
mm-hmm.
and only, I think only 20% of all businesses that start up make
mm-hmm.
it to 10 years.
Wow.
So it's a big deal. And a lot of that is, and this is part of my program when I'm working, as opposed to executive coaching with individuals or helping a nonprofit organization, but the bulk
mm-hmm.
of my work is with for-profit business enterprises, that the biggest reason is due to not starting out with the right foundation. So unless you actually started out in a business incubator and had that was a good incubator and where you were getting some coaching and education as
mm-hmm.
you go. So unless you have an MBA and already
mm-hmm.
worked for back to that thing I was saying before about somebody wants to go in my line of work. I said in any line of work for somebody who really knows it. You want to know what are the
mm.
foundations and best practices in the industry before
mm.
you start out. You'd be amazed how many
mm.
people are following their passion but are skipping steps and they're building on something that doesn't have the right foundation. So
mm.
what I do in my work is people have a lot of good to offer and can deliver great value and do certain things really, really well. If they're hitting a ceiling and they're stuck, it's usually because they've skipped something foundational
mm-hmm.
earlier on. So I've developed basically a pyramid, if you will, of things a company needs to know, understand, and do to have that solid foundation that lets them move from startup, from a dream to a startup, to industry best practices, to
mm-hmm.
beyond industry best practices when you get into proprietary practices
mm-hmm.
and products, and then eventually onto at the highest level,
mm-hmm.
Dominant industry player. And that's where,
mm-hmm.
you know, the big five, the big consulting firms,
mm-hmm.
they concentrate on that in my pyramid on the fifth highest level. That's where they like to work. They work
right
in those globally dominating companies. And the vast majority of companies, 99.9 something percent of all the companies in the world are not Fortune 5000 companies.
Right.
So working globally. And so really the important thing is to get a good combination of the consulting, the coaching, and the education required so that you have all the tools and resources available to make that happen. So you got to build. It's building blocks, and you got to start with a real solid foundation and work your way up. So I always like to look, you know, backwards and assess. Everything I do starts with an assessment, and we assess where are you at really. Let's take an objective look. My father was a research scientist, so
mm-hmm.
I'm all about, I grew up working in his lab. I was enculturated to verify data and not make assumptions and prove and be able to repeat your results and so on. So what I want to do is say, well, you may think this, but let's find out the reality. Let's take a closer look. Let's do an assessment.
Let's
determine what's missing. First, let's go back, fix the foundation, the framing, the structure of this thing, and now let's flesh it out going forward. And if people do that soon enough, they will break through their ceilings and they won't suffer that failure, you know, that the owner at Petaluma Sign Company warned me about before I even ever imagined myself. At that time, I did not imagine I would be an entrepreneur. I hadn't even, how he knew I would be before I did, to this day, I have no idea.
Wow. He just kind of chose you maybe at random, or maybe he saw something, a gleam in your eye or something about him. It's weird how life works like that. And maybe he planted the seed and and as a result, you thought about it and you became an entrepreneur. You know, maybe a little bit because of that. Who knows? It's weird how that happens. And,
very weird, but I'm grateful.
Great story, by the way. And you know, if he's still around, maybe you could reach out to him. I don't know, but it's interesting. You talked about the building blocks of the pyramid, and when people start a business, they have to kind of do their research and know what, you know, how to do things, learn best practices and whatnot. Like you said before, learning from others is so important. And I can see your numbers guy. You said your father was a research scientist, so you're all about the data and, you know, seeing what works and then testing it out again. Amazing. So hopefully, obviously, you know, these statistics are daunting and scary. You know, starting a business is a risk, but you definitely want to, you know, they always talk about taking educated risk. You know, there's good risk, there's bad risk, and you want to do what you can to put all the odds, to stack the deck in your favor by, you know, learning how to do it the right way as much as you can. Curious, now obviously you've lived quite a lengthy life, and I know you have more years to live. What important life lessons have you learned yourself or from others, in addition to the ones you mentioned already? And this goes for, you know, everyone, not just entrepreneurs or coaches, but what life lessons would you like to share with us?
Okay, well, there are so many, but what I'd share with you right now is that I think one of the biggest things that even I, until very recently, fully succumbed to was this thing called self-limiting beliefs. Mm. That's a big deal, and I learned a lot at the company I worked for before I went off on my own about this. They proved things to me that I would have said things that I said, that can't happen, that won't happen, that's not possible. And then, lo, they happened. And I realized, wow, I did not set the bar high enough. Mm. And that's usually the result of this thing called self-limiting beliefs that we all grow up with and have and develop. And overcoming self-limiting beliefs is a big deal. And in fact, just based on my experience and working, it's the biggest obstacle. It's bigger than the obstacles that are out there in the real world. They are real, and we need to overcome them. But the biggest, most significant obstacle is our own self-limiting belief system. And so on the one hand, it's bad news. It's depressing that we do that to ourselves. But the good news is that also means the solution lies within us. There's nothing outside that prevents us from overcoming that. It's strictly up to us. So that's the good
thing.
And I would say that the other thing I've learned in recent years is just how important leadership and company culture are. You know, the leadership and company culture are issues that were at the core of why I left the company I had been working for and went off and created Elevate Now Consulting, was that I had basically a disagreement about what leadership should look like and what company culture should look like. Mm. And it was a bit of a crisis. And so I went out and I took a deep dive. So I spent my first year in transition taking a deep, deep dive into those topics, into culture and leadership. And I've come to realize that, you know, all the building blocks are important. All the pillars, you hear people use the term pillars, all the pillars of entrepreneurship, of a business, they're all important. And all the building blocks are important. And all the components in the business model are important. But none of them have any value if you don't have great leadership and a good organizational culture. You're not going to be able to hold that all together, go out, and convert that, all those other things, into any kind of an enduring, profitable value, because poor leadership and poor company culture will undermine any product or any service. It's absolutely critical. So if we can concentrate on leadership, organizational culture, company culture, and eliminating self-limiting beliefs, and learn to to hold ourselves accountable, kind of manage by numbers, set objectives, have KPIs, and learn to admit when we don't know something and have no shame around that whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
We start to become open-eyed, lest you become as little children, you know, open-eyed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And objective and humble and hardworking and appreciative. Mm-hmm. When you start integrating this into your culture, amazing things start to happen. Because everything is done by teams. I mean, product is product. Robots do what robots do. Machines produce what machines produce. But what makes greatness out in the world of economic activity are what our teams of people doing. That's what makes the difference.
Mm. Wonderful. You know, as they say, teamwork makes the dream work. It's so important to have great culture. And, you know, for people to kind of buy into that culture. And there's a synergy when people get together and they're vibing, you know, the wheels are running just right and whatnot. And it's almost like a well-oiled machine. So, and obviously leadership, of course, is important. So definitely. And you talked about the self-limiting beliefs. You know, it's interesting how so many people have automatic negative thoughts. They have to stomp out those ants, so to speak. And you learned at that firm where they made the impossible possible, and they sort of kind of opened your eyes to the what self-limiting beliefs are and to be wary of them and whatnot. It's you know, a lot of people look at this whole idea of thinking positive and think they kind of roll their eyes and think it's hocus pocus magic, but there is something to it, because you know, when you think of a red car and you focus on a red car in your mind a lot, you go outside and you see a whole bunch of red cars, more red cars than you remember before. And they're always there, but you just weren't really focused on it, right? It's not magic. It's just, so it's interesting, you know, when you're optimistic and you think positively, you're more likely to see, you know, the opportunities and whatnot that you were blind to before, you know? I do think there is something to it. And yeah, so I am a strong believer in the law of attraction, you know, thinking positively. And it's something I struggle with personally, but I try to overcome it every day by doing affirmations and doing some other stuff so I can think more positively. So, and you mentioned that these self-limiting beliefs are bigger obstacles than what people find externally. But the good news is they themselves can fix this issue. So it's interesting how a lot of success boils down to what people do individually within themselves and also externally with, obviously you mentioned the teamwork and human beings working together and whatnot. And so obviously to get anything done, you have to work with other people. And I guess that's what networking is about and, you know, and so to speak. And you also have to learn from others, a coach, mentor, like we talked about before. So, it's interesting. So thank you so much for that. I'm curious, what book recommendations do you have for folks?
You know, I would I actually have a really big reading list of things I recommend, and it would be too big to go over and
okay.
in this podcast. But so people can reach out to me, and I'm happy to share if I know what it is they're looking for. But two books that I've read that have been really influential. I just find myself a huge fan of Jim Collins. So if you read Built to Last, and then its prequel that he wrote after it called Good to Great, those are two fantastic, seminal business books that I to me, those are must reads. So Jim Collins, Built to Last, and Good to Great. And then you know, recently I've been enjoying as I look at company culture issues, there's Amy Edmondson and there is Liz Wiseman, who wrote Multipliers. That's a really, really good book. And Brené Brown. I just recently read a Dare to Lead, or I think that was the title of it. So, yeah, that's really great work being done right now by Brené Brown and Amy Edmondson and Liz Wiseman. Strongly recommend them. And on company culture, on organizational health, Patrick Lencioni Five Dysfunctions of a Team and other things he's written and the work they do at the Table Group. That's been very influential. Patrick is great, and his whole team does really great work. And there's more. Certainly, anybody can reach out to me, and I'd be happy to share reading list ideas on various topics.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And I'll definitely be doing that, of course, in the future. I love to read. And I'm curious, and thank you so much for those book recommendations. I'm definitely going to check them out, particularly the Jim Collins one. I think there was one or two you mentioned there. And I'm curious, what are you going to ever write a book yourself about your life or about anything else?
I'd like to. I don't know if it'd be about my life. I might want to write about maybe my ancestors a little bit, what led to me, but more likely on what I've come to understand about the world. I would like to write a book or two, to be honest, and it's a matter of finding the time. The things I'm doing right now keep me pretty busy, and to write well, you need big chunks of time, and I'm looking forward to having those in the not too distant future. I would like to do that, but not right now. Don't hold your breath.
Okay, no problem. When you do write that book, you know, when you have time, and, you know, I definitely would buy it, so keep me posted. I'd be the first person online to read it, so you have at least one customer, so got to start somewhere. And thank you so much for that answer, and I'm curious, would you ever start or create your own podcast?
No, you do a good job of it. I'm happy to be a guest on podcasts. I've got... you know, I do have educational outreach, and we'll be making, sharing, information as I can. But I probably won't take up podcasting myself. I'll just help support other people's podcasts.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And obviously, I'll check out that educational stuff you'll put out. And, you know, I actually spoke with one guest who said that magic really happens when you're a guest on other podcasts. So I think sticking to that is a great idea. You're definitely a great guest, and, I want to thank you for this enlightening and inspiring and educational conversation and discussion. Definitely was one of the best interviews I've done, so thank you so much for that, and thank you to the audience for listening. Can you go ahead and describe all the ways people can get in touch with you if they want to use, or if they know someone who could use your services, or to put a dynamic center of influence in their network?
Oh, certainly, yes. I can be reached through our website, elevatenowconsulting.com. My email is brent@elevatenowconsulting.com. So that's the easiest way. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I have a personal and business page. I don't post much. I'm not a big Facebook fan, to be honest, but I keep a presence there, so you can find me there as well. But probably, connecting through LinkedIn or just directly to my email, brent@elevatenowconsulting.com. You can contact us through the website. Happy to talk to anybody about anything. If I can help in any way, happy to do it.
Thank you so much for that. And that's just emblematic of your benevolent and generous spirit. So thank you. And again, thank you for coming on the show. The information you provided will be listed in the episode description section, so people will be able to see and read it there. All right. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to thank the audience as well. Do you have any last word or final send-off?
Well, just thank you for reaching out. I don't know how you found me or why, but it's been great, and I've been connecting with some of the people you introduced me to. Already had a Zoom session or two, and I have, I think, three more scheduled, just continuing the network, and was already able to refer a critical service provider to, one of your people you hooked me up with. So it works. I mean, it works rapidly. Good things just start happening when you do the networking. So thank you for reaching out.
You got it. Thank you. And thank you for helping out those folks. And, they say the more you network, the luckier you get. I came up with that line based on the harder you work, the luckier you get. But I definitely think the harder you network, the luckier you get as well. That's so true. And thank you so much for coming on. So I'm going to see you guys in the next episode. Everyone take care and have a wonderful, blessed day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Got it. Hey guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over, to the Apple Podcasts app And if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. We can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.